CampYell.ca virtual newsroom for this week. Back for 2021 with Marty and Charlie. Returned from our holiday break. Charlie, what did you get into this break?
Probably about the same as everybody else this year. I mean, not a whole lot. Weren't really a lot of things to go out and do. So I think, like everybody, I was sitting at home and eating way too much.
Watching sports, old sports, sports series, like Ted Lasso. Have you seen that yet?
Sports. I haven't watched it yet. I still haven't got to that yet.
I watched a bit last night. I got to pound it out this weekend. I saw like Kerry Washington posted about it. I don't know.
I've heard a lot of good things, so that's on the list for sure.
Yeah, the videos are great, obviously. So that drives me back. So we enter 2021 with quite a bit of stuff happening over the break in the CPL specifically. Tons of signings. I think it's about a dozen or so total. We thought, just to wrap it up, we would each give our top three signings of this break. There were some pretty significant ones. I'll start, I guess. I think for me, anyways, number one has to be Shami Chome going to FC Edmonton, back to the Eddies. This is a big signing. It's a big signing for this club because you're getting a guy that obviously knows the team. And it's quite an important piece for the impact. It was, rather. He played almost an entire season in 2019. That, for me, Shome coming back, I think it's a big signing for Alan Koch as well, because it shows that this team can draw in some pretty big names, even though they're sort of coming off of that tough year. So for me, anyways, it's also a bit of recency bias since that one just happened, at the Monday of this week. And I think he's probably, for me anyways, the number one signing. But Charlie, who do you got?
So I've gone with one from just a couple days ago, with Maury Doner going to Halifax, just because it kind of answers a pretty big question, because I think Halifax had a lot already in place with all the guys they re-signed. But I think the big guy that was leaving was Chris Nvigenza, who obviously went to York United. And they've pretty much just done a straight up fullback swap with York by signing Maury Doner. And I think it kind of would allay a lot of fears that they might really, really be a little weaker at that spot now that they've lost Ensa. I mean, I'm not sure Doner is as good as Ensa, but it's a really good position for them to fill. And it's really important for them to have that now.
They're certainly comparable. Yeah. Okay, I picked a player that has played against Aston Villa in the last 2 years.
Oh, no.
Do you have any guesses who this is? Actually, yeah, 2 years, 2 years.
Is it Fraser Aird?
No, that's actually a pretty good guess. So Tom Field for Cavalry FC. What? So this one, I think... I remember texting some people specifically at Calgary saying this signing, because it's coming between Christmas and New Year's, I don't think it's going to get nearly enough attention. This guy played for Brentford in the championship for, I think, about a half of a season in 2016-17. And that team has been quite good and has been building, obviously, in that division. You know that division well, as do I. maybe me a little bit more than you now at this point. But... he's got he's like 22-23. He's coming at a really good age. I think he just had some sort of injury troubles at Brentford, and that's why he's out. But again, Tommy Wilden Jr. just saying that this signing is quite big. And again, he's going to be quite a replacement for Nathan Bevilla, that's for sure. Again, played against Aston Villa. I think they lost, but
probably. And not to mention Republic of Ireland International.
Yes. Youth sorry. I guess checking all of Charlie's boxes.
Yeah.
Okay. Who do you got?
So my turn. I'll go with another intra CPL swap with Kyle Porter going to FC Edmonton, and then another guy leaving York, a guy who I think it's kind of hard to get a read on what I think of how he's played in a CPL, but he's always been really good from set pieces, which has been a major problem for FC Edmonton. And it's something that Alan Koch has said that he wants to kind of focus on. And he's a pretty versatile player that you can plug pretty much anywhere in a lineup. So I think Kyle Porter will be a pretty useful addition to Edmonton's attack.
Yeah, I'm interested how much interest he got this offseason, because he's on the wrong side of 30 at this point. And mm-hmm. he's still quite good. Like you said, Charlie, like you don't know what to make of his CPL career, but I think he's actually had a pretty good one.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, I think so as well.
Yeah, like, I don't know, he contributes goals. He's
quietly
like
good.
Yes, yeah, definitely under the radar. Okay, so mm-hmm. Edmonton has owned the last couple weeks in terms of signing, so I'm going to tack on Fraser Aird to this one. I think that, people can say a lot about if they like Fraser Aird for Valor last year. I heard, like, complete mixed bag. But, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I think he was in the top 85% or something per 90 minutes in, like, four or five different categories. It was, like, shots, key passes, like, through ball receptions. Like, even getting back on defense, I know the numbers showed that he was quite good at that. His only goal came from the penalty, but I think we can agree that in certain spurts for Valor, he looked quite good. I don't know if he ended up sort of parting ways with them. I don't know how that happened, but I think that's a pretty good pickup for Edmonton. We'll see. It might be a couple years and see how it turns out, or maybe 1 year. But I think, you know, I think especially if you can, what if you can put Porter on one side and him on the other, it could be dangerous.
Yeah, it could be. I think it's kind of interesting that Edmonton's bringing in a few more sort of veteran kind of presence guys, which maybe they think that they needed more of after last year. So I think this is going to be a vastly different team. And if I was an Eddies fan, I'd be pretty excited. But for my third guy, I'm going to stay in Alberta, but not Edmonton. I'm going to go with Matthias Roskopf,
who
is a guy that signed for Cavalry and kind of like Tom Field, didn't get a lot of attention, because I think it was kind of in the middle of December when nobody really cared. but kind of similar to, maybe not quite as impressive a resume as Field, but still a guy with a good pedigree. He comes from Boca Juniors, which anybody who comes from an academy like that is, I mean, the expectations have to be pretty high. He played for Argentina's under-17 team, which is not an easy youth team to make by any stretch. He had a pretty okay career, kind of going around a few teams in Romania and so on, maybe looking for a little bit of a change of pace here in Canada. But I think that he's got a lot of potential. I mean, I haven't really seen him play, but just judging on where he comes from and the kind of pedigree he has and what Tommy Wheeland Jr. has said about him, that's a player that I would maybe look out for and study up on if you're a Cavs fan who haven't heard the name Matthias Roskopf yet.
Edmonton and Cavalry dominate that list. Let's switch back out east to a very sad day in CPL history, and I think a very sad day in Charlie's history on planet Earth as well. Javier Acuña leaves Atletico Ottawa and goes back to Liga MX. Nicasa is the team that he linked back up with. I think they're starting their season. We're recording this Friday. I think it's starting today. I think they play maybe Saturday or Sunday. Is he the best player in CPL history, Charlie? And why?
okay. He's definitely the most talented player, I think, to play in this league. I mean, like, I don't think there's ever been a player come to the league who had played successfully and played a good role at as high a level as he did so recently before coming to the league. Like, he was starting in Liga MX pretty much the year before he signed in Ottawa. And I think there were moments at the Island Games when you'd see him on the pitch and you'd be like, oh, this guy's like miles better than everybody else here. Just because he's played at such a high level in Mexico for some of the best teams on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, then he comes to Ottawa. I think if Ottawa had gotten farther in the tournament, gotten to the second round maybe, there's no way that Acuña wouldn't have been at least nominated for player of the year, right?
Yeah, I agree with that.
He was just so obviously central to their team. He was so clearly the guy. And there were just times when you'd see him play and he'd pick out a pass that nobody around him would be expecting, because he just has so much experience and quality that he's picked up in at really high levels, and it hasn't lost him. I mean, he's still 32, but like he was still kind of running around and covering a ton of ground despite playing a game every 3 days, playing 90 minutes for Ottawa like twice a week. So it is going to be sad to see him leave. It might still end up being a good sign for the CPL if he does come into the Nikasa side and kind of still play a role, because that maybe reflects well on the fact that he's able to play in the CPL and still go back to Mexico, which is obviously a higher level, and still play a role there.
Mm. Yeah, Oliver Platt from One Soccer reporting that they don't expect him to come back to Ottawa. That's kind of the tricky bit, right? We're seeing with certain players leaving, it looks like they may come back, especially if the seasons don't match up. But yeah, that's also what we're hearing as well. He likely won't be back this season, which is, again, a real shame. A fun conversation to have is with any York player that was on the pitch during their first game of the Island Games and talking about experiencing him for the first time, and in some cases not having any idea. Like, I've talked to midfielders that just say it was like they weren't set up for it. They were just, you know, like you weren't prepared for what he was about to do, which I thought was just a brilliant bit of secrecy on PEI. So Atletico Ottawa and Forge, I guess technically Ottawa's now got a little bit into this as well with Ricky Gomez being released, but they're the two teams that really haven't done much this offseason. But we've had a lot of action from the other six teams, I think, and teams are starting to catch up in terms of roster moves. My question is, who's had the best early preseason so far? The sort of the months after the season's passed, where you're starting to decide who you want to keep and who you want to bring in. Who's had the best run so far for you?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this. I am tempted to go with York, but I don't want to fall into the trap that I fell into last year, which was kind of putting massive expectations on York despite not really knowing what any of their players could do. And making judgments based on players that I've never seen before. So I'm not going to do that again, even though I'm tempted to, because they have really impressively rejigged the whole roster. But I'm not going to do that because it's a dangerous game and I won't be trapped by that again. So I think I'm going to have to go with Cavalry.
Interesting.
Which is maybe a strange choice. But I think, I mean, they haven't done that much. They've obviously made some big signings. They've signed Joe Di Chiara, and then Field and Roskopf and so on. But part of like what makes a good offseason for Cavalry is just getting healthy, because they're still going to be a massive team when they come back in 2021 with some guys like Di Chiara who will make a massive difference. So I think that they're going to be a pretty scary team when they come back, especially having kind of been disappointing at the Island Games by their own standards. So I think they'll have a lot to play for, and they'll be pretty hungry when they come back.
Yeah.
Are you going to say Edmonton?
I wrote down Edmonton first.
I thought about it as well.
Well, it's tough because I think that they're really building from scratch in many respects. And when I say that, I mean that Alan Kosh has come in kind of late, and I do like that they brought back Mele Temguia. I think Ramon Sori has been one of their better players over the 2 years, so I like what they've been able to retain. But I think I'm gonna go with Halifax, because so my reasoning is I think that Maury Doner is a perfect complement to that back line. It's funny because I talked to him before a story that's going to come out today, and he says that, you know, the York release, he gets released from York on a Saturday, and Stephen Hart calls him first thing Monday morning to say, "You're coming to Halifax." And I mean, how many players in the CPL can have that kind of like immediate snap from certain coaches? I think there's a few. But to get a player like that specifically would replace Krstnevich Ensa, I think was great. And if you look at the players that they have brought back, and I would say also on the terms as well, Like, you have Akeem Garcia for 2 years, Peter Schall for 2 years, Mateo Restrepo for 2 years. I really like the core of this team. I think that the only thing that's really missing is Abu Sissoko, which we've already sort of covered on this show about whether or not he's going to be able to come back. And we're hearing of some other signings, too, that I think are going to really elevate specifically the back line. I think this is going to be a team that will look very similar next year, but I think they prove that they can do it. And again, like Corey Bent, Alex Marshall, Akeem Garcia, Joao Morelli.
Yeah.
Like, if to retain those four players, I think is excellent work. And again, they're only just about trying to complement and try to flesh it out. So I don't know. I think Cavalry is an interesting one for me, though. I think you're probably trying to say who's more right. I like Calgary, though. I think that's that is a team that's going in the right direction as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Halifax is in a good spot as well, though, just because they've got so much stability now. Like, they've kind of got a pretty clear plan of which are the guys that are going to be the core of the team. And it's kind of, I mean, it's not easy, but it's easier now for them to go out and be like, okay, what are the holes we have to fill? How can we supplement this team rather than the clubs that have had to basically strip it down and start over, like, to an extent, Edmonton and York have had to do this offseason.
Yeah. Okay, let's finish playing our game of catch up here and then get out of here. So the Canadian men's national team camp. There is a camp. And it's this month. I think it's next week, formally. Gareth Wheeler from One Soccer had some info out on their feed this week. You should go check that out. Just talking about, you know, the logistics of it, because I'm not gonna lie, Charlie, you know, like, having a camp at this time when, you know, we're in lockdown in Canada, it's maybe a little bit hard to sort of wrap your head around, but it is happening, and they do have quite a number of players that have gone down there. But maybe it's Marco Bustos. Maybe we talk about the CPLer that has made this roster. His first call up, I think, in about 5 years, which is crazy. I wrote down here that there is no more deserving CPL player to get a call up. Do you agree with that? Because from my understanding, interpretation, it's that he's performed quite well. He's 24, so he's not necessarily, you know, the ultra young type player that you want to bring in to the mold, like a Tristan Borges or whoever. But he performed the best.
Yeah, and I think the fact that he's not that young, the fact that he's 24 and therefore not eligible for the Olympic team, is kind of further proof that this is Canada Soccer saying, yeah, you earned this. Like, you played so well in the CPL that you've deserved a proper call-up. He's not kind of coming in to trial for the Olympic team. Yeah, you're probably right that he's no more deserving player. I think this is probably he more than any other player. When he got to the CPL, it was kind of one of his goals to get back to the national team. And it's been kind of interesting to see a player use the CPL as that kind of avenue back to the national team. So it's really heartening to see it work and see him kind of rewarded for being consistently one of the best attacking players in the league. I am surprised that, to be honest, that he's the only one there.
Yeah, I am as well. I think that the reason behind that, though, is just the how the CPL season was maybe a bit shorter. Well, it was a bit shorter than what, like, MLS had. Because you look about, like, think about, like, the Canadian players that really stood out in MLS this year. Like, Dwayne St. Clair, Alistair Johnson, Tejan Buchanan. They're all there. Ayo Akinola, he's there as well, right? Like, I think those players, which is a whole nother story. but those players have all made it, I think, just because there was more time. But
yeah,
It's
just, I'm trying to figure out what exactly this camp is for, right? Because I mean, there's some guys that are just kind of being brought into the fold for the first time. I mean, they can't be cap tied at this camp, but kind of with a goal to sort of get them more involved with the program. There's guys that are obviously kind of intended to be part of the Olympic qualifiers, which, to me, I'm a little surprised Caden Cheung maybe didn't get a call up for this one, because I would expect him to be at the Olympic team. And then there are just guys that will be part of the squad, probably for the Gold Cup at least, especially if that's kind of a rotated sort of roster coming after the World Cup qualifiers. But again, there are CPLers I would maybe expect to be considered for that as well. Particularly Amir Didic.
Yeah.
I think.
Yep. And I think there's 11 or 12 first time call-ups, I think.
Yeah.
Including Joel Waterman, who we haven't mentioned. You hit the nail on the head, Charlie, where it's just like a mixture of that. And I think they're just trying to see, like John Herdman's just trying to get as many people in to try to get people acclimated with the program itself.
Yeah.
Like literally every element of the program that can't be taught on Zoom. And I think that's quite important because 2021 is, and the matches that are going to really impact this national team program are going to come like within 2 months. They're playing, within 3 months, they're playing Bermuda to kick off World Cup qualifying. Right. And you're staring down the barrel of a 14 month break. So I think it's just about getting in as many players that just frankly aren't even familiar with how Canada would run a national team camp. I think that's going to be the most important part. So maybe just looking ahead to 2021, I know you're doing a piece on this, Charlie, but like this is going to be a massive year for Canada.
Huge.
The men's team and the women's team. But like it's as hard because we're in lockdown to wrap your head around how many games are going to be playing.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, this is going to be, I mean, if everything goes to plan, the busiest year the national team has maybe ever had, because they could play as many as like 20 competitive games this year if they make a decent run in a Gold Cup and they qualify for the last stage of World Cup qualifying. There's a lot on the table in just the next kind of 12 months for Canada. I mean, not to mention Olympic qualifying, but there is a Gold Cup, which might play second fiddle. There's World Cup qualifying with a kind of a crazy route that's going to have them play a lot of games, ideally, if they can get through this group and then beat Haiti, probably, in a two-legged series. They're gonna be in an octagon or whatever we want to call it against some really tough teams, and they're gonna have to play like three matches per international window against really good teams. A lot of them are gonna be on the road, so this is gonna kind of be maybe the sink or swim moment for this team as it is at the moment. I mean, obviously they're really young, and a lot of these guys will be part of the team for decades. But like just for this kind of iteration of the team now, with kind of some veterans still in the mix and obviously the younger guys coming up, this is kind of it for them. Like this is it's show me what you got now, because the time for kind of progressing and coming together is now turned into the time for them to see if they can actually do it as a team on the biggest stages.
Canadian Men's National Team Camp, sponsored by Allstate, is coming up, I guess, this week. Probably going to get some more information, I'd expect, even the day we're recording this or the weekend, maybe the first thing next week, just about some of the players that will be there and who won't be there, obviously, because, you know, we just, shout out to Gareth Wheeler again at One Soccer for scooping that Liam Fraser and Liam Miller both won't be there. Liam Miller just signed for Charlton Athletic, so that makes sense. And Fraser's got an injury. But yeah, I think there are going to be some players that just won't be able to make it, and there'll be some changes that we'll be waiting on for sure. Okay, Charlie, before we wrap this up, you didn't give me anything. Like, what did you really get into this holiday break?
What did I really get into?
Yeah, give me something.
the cabinet. What did I get into? I tried watching The Crown. It was all right. I got really into watching Aston Villa Football Club put up results against really good teams.
They're so good now, eh?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Every team we play against, the headlines the next morning are that team is going to give Villa £150 million for Jack Grealish.
Yeah, he's probably going to Man United, eh? That's too bad. Mm-mm. That's too bad. Okay, so we'll be back next week, and we'll be back next week for the rest of the year. Hopefully, we'll have some more info on the CPL U Sports Draft, because that's coming up this week. This month, I should say. We'll have a date for that, hopefully, and then some more details to go around it, because then, again, that's going to be a big story for the 8 CPL teams. Again, 16 picks, 2 rounds, and lots of good U Sports talent, again, on table this year. Okay, until then, see you next week.